For many people, the word tequila conjures up hazy memories of nights followed by mornings of sheepish regrets, pounding headaches, and unforgiving hangovers. But it needn't be that way, says Chantel Martineau, author of How the Gringo Stole Tequila, A Modern Age of Mexico's Most Traditional Spirit. Ms. Martineau spent years immersed in the world of tequila, visiting distillers and farmers in Mexico, meeting and tasting with leading experts and mixicologists, and looking into the history and culture behind Mexico's iconic drink. Her book is published by Chicago Review Press, and I'm very pleased to welcome Chantel Martineau to our show today. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
You argue that what most Americans know as tequila, the golden liquid in the shot glass, mm-hmm. downed with a little help of salt and a lime wedge, is not tequila at all.
Well,
if it's not tequila, what is it?
Maybe not at all. It's not 100% tequila. Most people's first experience with tequila, with the salt and the lime, doing shots, tends to be what's most popularly known as mixto. Only 51% agave distillate, and then the other 49% is, I don't know, it could be sugar cane, it could be...
So it's diluted, or...?
It's a hybrid. It's diluted, yes.
So when I order a Jose Cuervo at a bar, that's mm-hmm. what I'm likely to get?
Yeah, absolutely.
Why can't the other 49% yes. come from other agaves?
Well, that's a great question. Let's dive right into that. Tequila is protected by an appellation of origin status, which means it has to be made in a certain geographical region in Mexico. It has to be made from agave grown in that region. And the laws just state that it has to be made from 51% blue agave, which is one type of agave, and the rest from other sugars.
And is blue agave the only one that would make a legitimate tequila?
Well, it's the only one allowed in the tequila appellation. But, you know, tequila would have, 150 years ago, 200 years ago, would have been... really just one of the many mezcales made around Mexico, which is a sort of a broader category of agave distillates. And, at that time, wherever you were in Mexico, if you were going to be distilling agave, you would be distilling whatever type of variety would grow near you. And even tequila would have been distilled with several different types of agave.
Well, now you've introduced another word, mezcal.
Mm-hmm,
and are tequilas mezcals? Because you buy a mezcal, it's a separate thing.
It is a separate thing. Tequila has become a separate thing. But yes, originally you might have said it was a mezcal. It would have been known as mezcal de tequila, tequila being a town in Jalisco, in the state of Jalisco. You know, just the same way champagne is really just sparkling wine from champagne. Cognac is brandy from cognac. You would have maybe just thought of it as a mezcal. Then over the years, it became popular and definitely became its own thing.
Because of branding?
Because of many reasons. Tequila, the town, is near the city of Guadalajara, which provided tequila makers with a really great market. It was a wealthy city, the second city in Mexico, a wealthy city made by the Spanish for the Spanish. There are also mines nearby, which also contributed to the wealth of Guadalajara. So tequila producers, had access to a really great market, and that helped
In Mexico first? The reason I ask is because like a holiday like Cinco de Mayo is not really celebrated in Mexico. It's only celebrated in the United States,
right.
An excuse for people to drink tequila.
It has become that, yeah.
But tequila in Mexico is still quite popular in its own.
And, in certain
and
parts.
Margaritas can be found all over the country.
They can. I mean, margaritas are not a traditional Mexican way of drinking tequila. You know, that's definitely an American influence there. Yeah.
Let's get back to the source. What is agave? How many varieties of this plant are there?
Agave is a wonderful plant. There are more than 200 varieties of agave. The vast majority of them are native to Mexico. The plant often, it looks like a big aloe plant. you know, the blue agave does anyway. There are many different kinds, and some of them, you know, are tall and skinny. Others are huge and fat. They can take, well, tequila's agave, the blue agave, takes on average 7 years to reach maturity. There are agave types growing in Oaxaca that will take 25 years to reach maturity.
So you have this plant, and then you cut into it the same way you would an aloe plant? Do you milk it?
Yeah, no, you don't milk it.
Well, I mean, you know, squeeze
right,
the liquid out.
Yeah, it's not that same way, yeah. The people who harvest agave, they're called jimadores, the people who harvest agave for tequila production. So it's extremely grueling work. They take a ripe plant and using a hoe, basically, they will chop off all the leaves. And it's the heart of the plant. It looks like a giant pineapple, and it's called a piña for that reason. That gets roasted in ovens or steamed in ovens, and that gets mashed, and that's what becomes tequila.
And the plant dies.
The plant dies.
So they have to grow another one, and
right.
You
it's
have
not
the
like
7 year
grapes.
Cycle, you
yeah.
say.
It's not like grapes where, you know, it just keeps coming back every year. No, you have to plant more.
My guest is Chantel Martineau. Her book, How the Gringo Stole Tequila, The Modern Age of Mexico's Most Traditional Spirit. So what does the distillation process of tequila consist of?
Well, you cook the agave, you mash it, it gets the juices get fermented, and then it gets distilled. It has to be distilled twice. And most brands are using copper pot stills or a pot still to distill twice.
Many people who drink tequila say that it produces a high unlike that of other alcohols, mm-hmm. that in fact it can act as a stimulant as opposed to a depressant, or that it has psychotropic properties. Mm-hmm. Is there any scientific evidence in that?
No.
So this is all in the mind?
I don't know if I'd say that. There's definitely anecdotal evidence. I can even attest to it myself that when you're drinking...
You've done your own personal research.
I have. that drinking, you know, 100% agave spirit, and especially like these really traditional small batch mezcales that are made with, you know, very little tinkering or additives or, you know, that are just very naturally made... I found that if you're sipping that all day, you might have a different kind of high. However, you know, of course, you know, when tequila came to this country, it was saddled with a bunch of myths, and that is one of them.
Now, I would assume that the small batch tequilas are only available locally. The stuff that comes here is kind of produced on a large scale?
Well, yes and no. There are only about 150 distilleries that produce tequila in the whole tequila region. But you have more than 1,600 brands. So what you have are usually tequila distilleries that make their own local brand, and then they'll make a brand for, you know, George Clooney or Justin Timberlake or P. Diddy or, you know, whatever brand is being sold on this side of the border. So it's just that you tend to not find the same brands in Mexico as you do here.
And is it possible to get an authentic tequila in this country?
Sure, you can.
Are they more expensive?
Not necessarily. I feel like there's, you know, two types of quote-unquote good tequila. There's, you know, good tequila that's in a really fancy bottle and that is very expensive. It can be expensive and you're
like
paying
like Patronum. And what is it, silver and a few others like that?
Well, Patron has a few different expressions, and it certainly was the first big luxury tequila that most people got to know, yeah.
How big is the market for tequila worldwide, and how much of that market is in this country?
Well, I would say, I think okay, the tequila has to be made in Mexico. 7 out of 10 liters are exported, and Americans are swallowing 80% of those exports. Cuervo claims, by its own estimates, to be responsible for something like a third of production. And in terms of production, I believe the numbers are about 260 million liters are produced.
But it hasn't caught on in Asia the way Scotch has, or
I think it will. In 2013, the laws were changed in China to allow for imports of 100% agave tequila. It had been restricted for several years. And certain people in the industry are projecting that China's going to overtake the U.S. within the next decade or quicker.
Well, can they produce any more tequila? Because as you say, it's produced in a limited area. The plants take a while to mature.
It is tricky. While I was researching the book, I came across a group of people that kind of refer to themselves as a movement. I call them in the book the agave activists, and they are certainly worried about the sustainability of the industry, because it now has to be, increased demand for tequila means increased demand for agave, and it's just grown in these vast monocultures that eroding the soil and just taking over the landscape.
A listener has called in to ask, why is tequila associated with mean or sloppy drunks?
Well, again, that's like part myth and part maybe an ounce of truth. I mean, I think that, if you're told that something is going to make you act a certain way, maybe you're more likely to act that way.
Getting back to mezcal, you spoke to a marketer who referred to mezcal as the Bushwick of the spirits industry. Well, to our listeners who are unfamiliar with the burgeoning culture of Bushwick, could you explain what he might have meant by that?
I think he meant that it's very hip. it is very hip, and any
with the worm or without the worm?
Without the worm. Yeah, a lot of people in the industry, like bartenders and stuff, and sommeliers, are all very interested in mezcal, but definitely no worm.
What about pulque? What is that?
Pulque would have been the kind of the precursor of tequila and mezcal. It's an agave sort of beer that is much older. It's almost about 2,000 years old. Yeah, you don't really find it here. There is a place called the Pulqueria in New York City that does offer pulque, but it's something that is best enjoyed fresh.
Are people in Mexico happy with how popular tequila has become in the United States? Do they feel like we've kind of appropriated it?
It depends who you speak to.
Well, obviously, if I were the owner of Jose Cuervo, right, I'd be very happy about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, I definitely came across people who are saddened by, I mean, normal people. I'm not talking about brands here. I mean, I definitely came across people who were saddened when they see Americans drinking tequila with lime and salt. They feel like, where did that come from? And I mean, there is an answer to where it may have come from, but it's not how it's enjoyed.
Your book includes an appendix called Another Round, or 99 Tequilas and Mezcals to Try Before You Die, and you provide detailed information on how each spirit is made, cooked, crushed, fermented, distilled, as well as you give suggested retail prices. And I have to ask, did you sample all 99 yourself?
Yes. Yes, but I'll give this disclaimer.
But you don't seem like a mean person.
I don't think I do get mean when I'm sampling agave spirits. But I gave a disclaimer in that part of the book as well. Some of these, especially the mezcales, are so small batch that what I tried is gone forever, and you'll never get to try that expression of that spirit again.
What's a fair price to pay for a decent bottle of tequila?
I feel like you can get a decent bottle of tequila for anywhere from $35 to $55. I mean, $35 to $50, I would say. More than that, you might be paying for the bottle. And I'm talking about Blanco tequila. Once you start getting into aged expressions, you have to factor in the cost of aging, which, it has to live in a barrel for X number of months or years. So, I would say don't pay too much, because then you might just be paying for the bottle.
And you can find it at any local wine and liquor store? Because I suspect that the better ones are only available at specialty shops.
Yes, yeah, that would definitely be right.
Now, in Mexico, you get mezcal with an orange with chili on it. Mm. Why is that any more acceptable than salt and lime on your tequila?
Well, in Mexico, you'll get a little copita of mezcal with an orange with sal de gusano, which is worm salt. It's rock salt crushed with chilies and lime, and it's just smoky and salty and delicious. It's more acceptable because of the flavors are not covering up the taste of the mezcal. And the way it's taken, it's not a shot. You know, people sitting around drinking their mezcal and eating their oranges with the sal de gusano. They're just kind of dipping and biting and chatting and sipping. It's not it's not a situation where you're trying to cover up the taste of a harsh spirit.
What's a typical proof
of mezcal?
Mezcal or
tequila?
Mezcal is a little more potent.
Yes, yes. Well, tequila has adopted the standard 80 proof, but there is a bit of a backlash against that, just because, I mean, why 80 proof? You know, it should be, you should, when you're making a spirit, you should think about it a little more like if you're making you have a recipe, and it's a little suspect that every spirit would be 80 proof anyway. So you are starting to see some tequilas at higher proof, and I think it is actually inspired by the fact that mezcal can be higher proof. I once spoke to a mezcalero who was a mezcal maker who said to me, anything below 94 is just water.
Just one more question.
Mm-hmm.
Champagne or sparkling wines are made all over the world, not just in Champagne, and some pretty good ones. You can make pretty much anything. There are bourbons that are being made everywhere in the world. Can you grow and actually we have avocados from the United States that are almost as good as the ones you find in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Could we grow agave plants in the American Southwest?
You can, and there are agave spirits made there, but they are not tequila.
They can't be called tequila?
No, they cannot.
Uh-huh. For the same reason that you can't call a sparkling wine champagne?
For the same reason, yes.
Do you have a go-to tequila?
I have a couple, depending on the mood.
Okay, well, I guess we won't ask you what they are.
they're all in that last chapter there, that appendix with the 99 to try.
Chantal Martineau has written about food, drink, culture, and travel for numerous publications, including Afar, Allure, The Atlantic, Decanter, Edible, The Guardian, Red Book, Saveur, Time Out, The Village Voice, Wine Enthusiast, and now she's written a book called How the Gringos Stole Tequila. I'm feeling very guilty about that. The Modern Age of Mexico's Most Traditional Spirit. It is published by, who's publishing
it?
Chicago Review Press.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm just getting back from Juarez, Mexico, and I'll tell you something I want you to know. My poor head is aching, it throbs and it twirls from drinking tequila and teasing the girls. Don't get me wrong, because I'm not complaining. I have no regrets, I am only explaining for all of you fellows that ain't had the thrill of drinking tequila and teasing the girls.